Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Theater Podcast, intimate personal conversations with the industry's biggest names. Our guests today are real-life partners and now partners on stage, Michael Urie and Ryan Spahn. You'll obviously remember Michael Urie from our solo episode that I had with just him and me from, it was episode 128, actually. It's been a little while, and now this is the first time I've met his partner, Ryan Spahn, and getting to talk to the two of them together was just absolutely incredible because this is less of an episode about theater, actually, and I think more of an episode about how to maintain a successful relationship. The two of them get into how they've maintained their trust and their respect and their support of each other through this tumultuous, hard industry over the last 14 years. They've been together over 14 years, and just listening to them talk about each other, it's so sweet. They tell the story, too, actually, about how they pioneered the DIY multicam over Zoom when the pandemic hit. They were doing multicam Zoom from their apartment. It was actually really cool. So if you haven't seen Michael in Buyer and Seller, of course, go check that out. But the show that they're in now, the parts were specifically written for them because they had something written for them during the pandemic, and then they were the people that this writer wanted to work with again, and it just grew and grew, and she got more inspired, and now they're doing this full-fledged production at the Shakespeare Theater Company down in DC. It's actually amazing. So fair warning, there was some construction happening in my house while this episode was recording, so if you hear some faint banging in the background, don't worry. It's coming from your speakers, not from your actual local reality. So anyway, I've rambled long enough. Please enjoy this episode with Michael and Ryan.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here you go. One, two, three.
Today's guests, that's right, we have two of them, both amazingly talented stars of stage and screen. First up, I've had the pleasure of knowing and working with Michael Urie for several years now, who, of course, we all know from TV work such as Ugly Betty or his Broadway credits, most recently including Grand Horizons and Chicken and Biscuits, or two Broadway Podcast Network original radio plays, As the Curtain Rises and Twits. And also, we have Ryan Spahn, who I have the pleasure of meeting right now. Ryan is also a brilliant actor who rose to fame playing Sammy Halpern in What's Your Emergency and Preston in Common Ground, the web series. Some of Ryan's other roles I enjoyed include Ryan in the web series The Web Series, The Interviewer in Human Interest, and Joel in The Bite. And they are real life partners. They also are now stage partners, currently a week into their run in the show called Jane Anger in Washington, D.C. at the Shakespeare Theater Company. And now I have the pleasure of sharing. Now they have the pleasure of sharing the stage with each other night after night. Michael and Ryan, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Thank you so much. Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining me from the coat closet. You're doing.
We are here in the Shakespeare Theater coat closet where
there's a jar of tips.
Tip jar. There's a lost and found and lots of empty hangers waiting.
You should pull out one of the tips. It's going to say, like, don't quit your day job, right? You know. So obviously, Michael, you and I have had a solo episode and we've got other things. So for those listeners right now, I know we've got 45 minutes. You got a hard out. So if you want to hear all about Michael's upbringings, go back to our solo episode, which is 128. But Ryan, I want to dive into you real quick. And I want to know, what got you into theater? Where did you originally decide, like, this is my jam?
It originally started when I saw this local production of A Christmas Carol at the Meadowbrook Theater when I was about 11 or 12. And I decided I wanted to be in that show. And then the following year I was in it. And then I called Juilliard one day after reading an article about Robin Williams. And Robin Williams suggested how amazing Juilliard was, which is why I thought to call them. And so when I was 14, I called Juilliard in New York City, and they recommended that I go to Interlochen Arts Academy, which is a performing arts high school in Northern Michigan. And then I attended that school until I graduated high school. And then I moved to LA, and that sort of was the beginning of my love for theater.
Wow. And so you guys met out in LA, right?
We did first meet in LA, although Ryan doesn't remember it. We met through a mutual friend, and I liked this. Actually, our mutual friend, who was Ryan's roommate at Interlochen and my roommate at Juilliard, we were at his birthday party, and I said, "Hey, who's that guy over there? I like the looks of him." And my friend tried to set us
that
up.
Jib.
And so Ryan and I had a great couple of phone calls. And then we had a plan to meet and go see a play. We were going to go see Cherry Jones in Doubt at the Amundsen.
Yeah, I had tickets. We were going on a double date with another couple.
Nothing more romantic than Doubt. And I had to cancel because a friend died. Very sad. I was just not in the mood. And had to cancel. And then that was around the time that Ugly Betty first came on TV. So my life was like crazy at that time and totally changing. And I kind of dropped the ball. And it wasn't until like 2 years later that another mutual friend, now in New York, where we had both relocated.
He relocated for work and I relocated for work as well, but just I was doing more theater and it brought me to New York.
And so we reconnected in New York 2 years later. My life was very different by then, and then it worked. So we sort of met twice, two mutual friends, 2 years apart.
But Ryan, you don't remember the first time you guys met?
I remember being at the party that he is citing as where we first met, but I don't actually remember meeting him.
You don't remember being like scoped out, having somebody, yeah.
Well, I remember just like the thing, I was there with James, and James had gone to Juilliard with Michael, and all of their classmates were there. So I sort of remember meeting like 12 people from his school, which probably he was inside of that. And so I was meeting 12 new people and they were meeting one new person. So it makes sense that they might remember me and I don't remember the 12 people that I met.
So then you also had a guest star on Ugly Betty yourself. Like, were you in the same scene together? I don't know. Did you get to work together?
We were not.
You were in the scene with Mab.
Did I rob?
Yeah, you were
Betty?
A thief or something. There was a blackout.
Oh, there's a blackout in the building or something, and Betty graciously let my character in because she thought I was just this nice guy, and then I ended up robbing somebody.
I didn't have a scene with you. Oh. But we were a couple at the time, but I don't think they knew you were my boyfriend. I think you auditioned and got
the job. I got auditioned, and then they found out on set that we were together.
Yeah, and they put him in my dressing room.
Yeah, they did. They moved.
Which was definitely nicer than a guest star's dressing room would have.
Yeah.
fair. Well, it is, as the two of you, you both have like these amazing careers that independently are so great. How did it come together so that you're now together in DC? Did you audition together or audition separately? And it just, again, it so happened that you both got cast and now share a dressing room?
Well, and a coat closet. And for this play, actually, the roles were written for us. Talene Monahan, who wrote the play, who you might remember from The Government Inspector with me, and she wrote a play called How to Load a Musket that played at 59E59 right before the pandemic that Ryan was in. She's a wonderful actor and a wonderful writer. She had this idea early in the pandemic about William Shakespeare in quarantine writing King Lear, because I don't know if you remember this, but when the pandemic first hit, there were a lot of people online on social media and stuff saying to artists, hey, don't sit this pandemic out. William Shakespeare wrote King Lear during the Black Plague. And, you know, Tilene thought that was very funny. Like, okay, everyone calm down.
Yeah.
We're not going to write King Lear, but
time to be opportunistic.
Yeah, exactly. And so she had this idea, like, what if he had been stuck in quarantine with someone and had writer's block? And so she wrote this short play called Frankie and Will that she wrote with Ryan and me in mind. And we did it on Zoom for MCC Theater. MCC was doing a lot of short plays on Zoom at the time.
But like, this is like May 2020.
Earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Right when everything
lockdown.
Started going digital because everyone was panicking about what to do.
Yeah, we were in full lockdown. And so we did it all over our apartment. We like basically turned our apartment into Shakespeare's flat. And we had two phones going.
That we would switch between each other on Zoom. And so it looked like we had a multicam situation.
Yeah.
We had figured out how to cleverly move between Zoom rooms so that the audience felt like there were actual camera changes, even though it's just our cell phones being held at different angles.
Yeah, and the audiences were at that time used to seeing readings on Zoom, but I remember a lot of people saying it's so amazing to see actors in space together again.
Because we could touch. It was physical. Like we were physically touching, and it's physical comedy. The show is very physical, and so that was fun for people to watch.
And so it was just Will Shakespeare and his this apprentice, idiot apprentice, who Ryan played, and it was about 20 minutes. And most of the material that we did in Frankie and Will is now a part of Jane Anger. But Frankie and Will went really well. Got reviewed in the New York Times. Wow. A lot of people watched it. So Tilene was inspired to go write more. And what she always says that is so funny is like, she was like, it always amazed me how easily writing misogynist men came to me. And I need to offset this. And so she found this character in history, this actual person in history named Jane Anger. No one knows anything about Jane Anger, but except that there are these feminist writings, these pamphlets that Jane created, whoever this Jane was, created. And so Tilene has imagined who this person was and imagined that Jane knew Shakespeare. And in fact, that Jane is the only person who can help with Shakespeare's crippling writer's block. And meanwhile, Jane needs Will's help, Will Shakespeare's help, getting her writing published, because of course, in 1606, women weren't going to get published. And so she needed him, he needs her, they're trapped in an apartment together, and that's kind of the play.
Wow. I was going to say, it's like art imitates life a little bit, but it sounds like it was written based out of life. Yeah, that's so cool how it evolved like that. And then the two of you together in your apartment, you were performing. I mean, you did a lot more, right? You did a lot more performances.
Oh, yeah.
We did a lot of stuff during the pandemic.
The first big one was we did Buyer and Seller.
Right.
One man play that I was in for so long. We did that. In our apartment, and Ryan was like the you know, production designer, stage manager, cinematographer. He sort of worked everything behind the scenes, and I did the play in the corner of our apartment. And that was when we had two cameras for that too. So that was sort of when we had the idea, like,
can we switch between cameras?
Yeah, we can make theater in here. We can make or multi-camera television that you know feels like theater in here. And that, I think that was one of the first things that inspired Tilene.
But it inspired a lot of people, because I think then from that point on, we were sort of the go-to team for a lot of theaters to either understand how we did this. So they would ask us to do readings or ask us to do certain things in hopes of learning how we were able to manage this way of filming within our apartments.
Yeah.
And so it was nice to be helpful for theaters when we had figured something out pretty early on.
Right. That's so cool that you guys worked together on this. And I mean, it sounds like from the stories you've been telling that you've always been very, I guess, collaborative and lockstep of like pushing toward a goal together. But there are some couples that if you're in the same business, you get very competitive. And especially this is a business that's already very competitive. And have you found yourself like as a couple sort of like ever with the acting business trying to wedge itself between you, or do you hold together and, you know, you're back to back battling off the demons of the of the business together?
The things that wedge us is the business itself at times, not necessarily like, I wish I had the role that you got, or you're getting more opportunity than me. It's more the like ups and downs of the business and how emotional that can be. And that coming into our home can be something that we have to work really hard to not let that affect us as a couple, us as, you know, our home life, our quality of life. That's, I would say, the biggest thing that we have to balance.
Yeah, we're really, I mean, we're each other's biggest fans. Like, you know, so what's hard is it's very easy to support each other. It's very easy to like build up each other and to get excited about each other's successes. But you also take on the rejection, you know, which is constant in this business, and with shows close, shows get canceled, jobs don't happen, or jobs go away, or a global pandemic hits and everything goes away. Like that kind of stuff is all. So whereas like the joy is doubled, the success is doubled, the failure is also doubled. Wow. And that can be really hard, but it also like, he knows what it's like. I know what it's like. We understand each other. And also because we have different tracks in we have different paths in show business. It's been really helpful, I think, for both of us to see for me to see how his career works and for him to see how my career works.
Yeah.
And then to see how they intersect. And I will say like this one, we found this when we did this play in New York at the New Ohio in the winter, and we've done theater together before. We were in Hamlet together here in Washington. We did a play on Martha's Vineyard together once, and doing theater together can be really, really wonderful because we understand each other's rhythms so well. So like on stage, it's just like play. It's just fun. I know exactly when he's going to stop talking. He knows exactly.
There was a moment a couple of nights ago where I didn't hold for a laugh in a way that I know he would have wanted me to, because I wasn't predicting that there would be a laugh. But he looked at me in a certain way that I clocked it. And then that night he was like, hey, you know, in this one moment, and I said, yeah, yeah, I know you want me to hold for a laugh. You gave me that note on stage. I could tell in your eyes that you were giving me that note.
that is the kind of thing that like, it makes it really, cause like that's the kind of note that when you're working with an actor you don't know intimately, you might not feel comfortable giving them a note or asking them to do something like that. You might like have to go to the director or go through the stage manager or whatever. But when it's us, it's sort of easy to just be like, hey, hold for that laugh if it happens, or be ready to hold for that laugh if it happens, or please stop, you know, doing this or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're going to take a short break. Stay tuned for more of the episode.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
But the hard part about working together in the theater is that it, you know, especially like now we're open. We opened on Friday. And so now we have our days free, except for like when we're doing press and stuff like this. But it's hard. The hours are relentless. And you know, it's 8 shows a week. You're doing 8 out of 10s and sometimes 2 shows a day. And we have a dog and a cat. And so sometimes it's a little like there's no place to go to get away from it. Not each other, but it. Like the play is always. And that was something we had to sort of, when we did it the first time, we kind of had to, we would come home and we would talk about the play. And if it was a tough day at the play, then it was a tough day at home. And we eventually had to get better about that and to say to each other, okay, we can talk for 5 more minutes about the play and then we have to do something else. We have to talk about something else.
Yeah, because you want to come home and share your day or share your highs and lows with your partner. That's part of the joy of being in a partnership. But if you're both having the exact same experience, more or less, then there's no sharing. There's just commiserating. And then you can spiral down if you don't stop yourself.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And I was going to ask about, you know, everybody should get their time by themselves, even in loving and you know, quote, perfect marriages or relationships or whatnot, right? But because, you know, I love my family, but every now and then I'm just like, I gotta just get away from all of you and be by myself for a second. So yeah, that I was gonna say, that sounds really hard when you're day after day, night after night, and you're right, like you bring the struggles home with you, and then you talk about it. And what about the reverse, though? If there are things happening personally and you have to come and do this comedy together at night, right? Is it easy to like flip that switch and go into funny mode when if like there's been something stressful happening personally?
We're very good at switching things off. And we're also very transparent with each other. And so we can get through rough patches quickly because neither one of us is withholding with the other. So we communicate really well. And I think that allows for us to sort of figure something out before we enter the workspace, or we're just have done this long enough to know how to just like stop it, go do work, come back to it later and have it not interfere.
Yeah. We don't hold grudges. You and I, if there's a problem, we like deal with it.
Yeah. We don't hold grudges and neither one of us is overly sentimental. Not that that's a bad thing, but I think that can create some sort of like emotional things you hold on to if you're very sentimental about things. And I think that combination makes it easy for us to sort of work through things. Also, we don't work together all the time. Like we've been together 14 years and we've worked together, I would say, a total of a year and a half of that. And so much of our time is spent working separately or working in different states. And so we get a lot of time away from each other. And I think that level of pining helps us really enjoy the times that we share together.
That's really cool. And are there projects that you've talked about that you want to start doing like creatively?
Yeah, I've got a project that I'm going to go off and do without Ryan. He just finished doing a play off Broadway.
You actually did.
Well, that's a very funny story.
I was in a play at the Audible Theater, the Minetta Lane. And in the middle of it, I booked an episode of a television show and had to step away for a week or, you know, was allowed to step away. And the nature of my part didn't warrant them getting me an official understudy. And so Michael agreed to learn it and play the role for 5 or 6 performances, or how many did you do?
4.
4. While I shot this episode of this show. So we actually shared a role about a month and a half ago.
That was a first.
Oh, that's so fun. I was going to say, yeah, that's cool that you, the two of you together get to be the same person that is not either of you. You know what I mean?
But then also I was trying, like when I was rehearsing that play and doing that play, it's a very good play. I loved doing the play, and the part is a wonderful part, but it is actually a character that's only on stage for like 12 or 14 minutes. It's a very specific device character. And I would try to explain to him how hard the role was, even though it was only 12 minutes, but the character, it's an entirely Asian American cast. And I was the only white person in the show. And when my character would come on stage, it would introduce and remind the audience that this whole play would have been in Mandarin if this was performed the way it should be performed. But because it's being performed in New York, the Asian American cast are all speaking English. And when I enter, I create language chaos for everyone. And so it lived in sort of a weird place. Like I would speak in third person, or I'd use Google Translate to speak to the other actors, and I would explain to him how hard it was, and he couldn't quite get it. And then the first night he went on stage, I was like, how did it go? And he's like, it was terrifying.
It was terrifying. Because you're speaking, it's not linear. It's this character speaks in a sort of third person. It's a very cool play. It's called Good Enemy. You'll be able to hear it on Audible soon. It's very cool, but it was really hard. It's not a big part. I know there are no small parts. It's not a big part. There's not a lot of material, not a lot of stage time, but it's one of the scariest things I've ever done. And it was hard for you.
It was very hard.
A month of rehearsal.
It was very hard you couldn't get off rhythm. And then there was a night where we did get off rhythm and I went up on a line. Like I forgot my line for a second and none of us could help each other because I'm speaking in third person. The man playing my father, my girlfriend's father, Francis Ju, he doesn't speak English. And the girl playing my girlfriend, she doesn't understand what I'm saying. So we hit this moment where none of us could save each other. And we just lived in silence for a few seconds.
Terrifying.
Because it was literally, we couldn't help each other. And I just had to jump to the end of the scene.
That's the worst feeling ever. It's like, you just feel like your guts are starting to slowly fall out of your chest. Ugh.
It's theatrical skydiving.
There's also this like, this thing when, you know, like you get to a point in rehearsal and it can drive you really crazy. It drives me really crazy where, you know, where like you really need an audience. You know what I mean? Like where you're doing a play, especially a comedy or something that's supposed to elicit laughs like that, those scenes in Good Enemy or Jane Anger. You get to a point in a comedy where the only thing you can get a laugh from in the room from, you know, the director, the stage management, whomever's in the room, the other actors, the only thing that they'll really laugh at is a mistake or something that you do that's like way new or wild and wacky. And so,
because they've watched you do it for 2 weeks.
Yeah, because they've watched you. They've seen all the jokes. They've seen all the choices. They've seen all the bits. And the only thing you can get a laugh from is flub or a mistake or a wild and crazy inappropriate choice, which usually like or something that's like they call it a rehearsal laugh where – it's like, this is only funny to us because we know everything. So they're not going to laugh at the audience isn't going to laugh at this, but we'll laugh at this. Anyway, so you get tired of those. You know, you do those and then you're like, I got to get in front of an audience. I got to see what this is really like. And then when you go in front of an audience and you make a mistake, they do not laugh. they do not. It's like you know, like whereas any of that stuff would have
been. Oh, yeah. It had happened in rehearsal for Good Enemy, and the whole, you know, team would laugh. But it happens on stage, and it feels like a little part of you has just died.
Yes. Because the audience, you don't, sometimes they know you're making a mistake, but usually they just take what's coming at them as the way it's supposed to be. And so like, it just becomes this, like, scary, quiet, pregnant pause. Yeah. And you're like, right. This isn't funny to them. I'm used to like making a mistake and getting people to laugh. Like when I had a put in rehearsal for Good Enemy and I made a mistake, it would make people laugh. But then in the show, in front of an audience, if I made a mistake, they did not laugh. And our union, Actors Equity, they require that there be two notifications to an audience when an understudy goes on. So there are three ways you can notify an audience. There can be a slip of paper in your program. There can be a sign in the lobby, or they can make an announcement. So they put a slip of paper in the program, but they didn't have my name on a sign. They had these in the front of a theater, there's like at this performance, mm-hmm. the roles of blah, blah, blah. They didn't have my name on a strip. So instead of doing my name on a strip, they made an announcement. So literally right before the show started, somebody came on the God mic and said, at tonight's performance, the role usually played by Ryan Spahn will be played by Michael Urie. So not only
did they say the role of White Boyfriend?
Yes, the character's name
is White Boyfriend, which is already LOL.
So yeah, they didn't say that. The character usually played by Ryan Spahn. They said the role of White Boyfriend will be played by Michael Urie. And so as soon as the one white guy shows up on stage, they're like, understudy, point, 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 understudy. And so that like on top of everything, I'm like terrified because they know that I'm an understudy. It was terrifying. What a wild experience. And, you know, it wasn't the first time, and we've been together for over 14 years. There have been other times when Ryan has been in a play and I have been not working and he's maybe gotten a TV show or like maybe going to get something that would conflict. And we've half jokingly said, well, if you get that job and you have to miss a performance, I'll just go on for you. And it never happened until it happened. And now I hope it never happens again because it was terrifying. It was really fun. I'm so glad we did it. I'm so glad you got to go be on that show. But whoo, it was
scary.
How
much rehearsal did you have?
I had like 3 hours.
That's it?
Yes.
He had like 4 days notice. So he did have lead time to at least get familiar with it.
But I was out of town. So I had to come back into town. I was out of town.
And you were in DC doing...
I was here doing a photo shoot for this play. And I just did, and I was traveling. And so I wasn't like I could go and watch the play three times to like, no, the first time...
I mean, thankfully you had seen it.
I had seen it. Yeah. Yes. I had already seen it, thankfully. But no, I was just trying to learn in a vacuum and I had the wrong script and the show went on and it was really fun to do. And it was a beautiful play, but.
That sounds like my worst stress dream.
It is literally an actor's nightmare dream come to life.
No, I have legitimately had this recurring dream, and the show changes every time. But the most recent, I was attending Moulin Rouge, the musical, and over the God mic, they're like, Alan Seals, we need you to come to the stage door. And so I went around and they're like, all right, we have nobody to cover this swing role. We need you to go in and stand over here and learn the dance number, learn the dance number while the show is happening. And so I wake up and I'm stressed and I'm angry all morning. Cause I'm like, Oh God, they know I suck. They know I didn't know the role. And like, I have those actual stress dreams that you just went through. And this is giving me like shivers, just thinking about the pressure that you were under in those four performances.
That's fantastic. I've had that dream, not with Moulin Rouge, but I've had the dream where I'm in the audience and I'm supposed to, and I can't find the stage.
You're supposed to be on stage and you just can't find the stage.
And I can't find,
you can't get the entrance.
I'm like watching the show and I'm like, I don't know where the door is. I don't know how to get backstage. Like
my entrance is coming up and I don't know how to get there. Oh my God. Yeah. That, actors anxieties. That's what the union should be called. Actors anxiety. And then also, can we talk about Shrinking? Is that?
Yes, we can talk about Shrinking.
Okay. Absolutely. Okay. So Apple TV's Shrinking, Michael, you're going to be seen alongside Jason Segel, who serves as writer and executive producer. And this little guy, he's on the up and up, called Harrison Ford, Jessica Williams, Christina Miller. Jeez, dude. Like, what, tell us about this. What was that like?
It's so good. I've watched like 9 episodes and he's excellent on it. And the show is so excellent.
Thank you. That's so sweet, Ryan. Thank you. I had major imposter syndrome when I got there to be working with all those people. It's created by Bill Lawrence, Brett Goldstein, and Jason Segel. Bill Lawrence is the co-creator of Ted Lasso, and Brett Goldstein is on Ted Lasso and a writer on Ted Lasso. And so I love that show, Ted Lasso, and it's, as you may know, a big hit. And so suddenly here I am with Jason Segel, who I also have loved, Harrison Ford, who I literally had action figures of. And I'm like, are they sure that they, did they mean to cast me? It's the first time I've ever really had imposter syndrome. And the first month of being there, I was like, I didn't know any of them. I made an audition. Ryan helped me go on tape in our bedroom. And
so he owes me 10%.
I owe him 10%. Fair. And then when I got the job, I just never met anyone. It was the first time I'd ever done a job where I didn't know a single person. And it was terrifying, but very cool. I mean, a really warm and happy place to go to work. And working with Harrison Ford, he's a good man. He's a sweet, he likes to pretend to be cranky, but he's so, mm-hmm. he loves working and he loves being there and he loved, and he's really good in the show.
Yeah, he's great.
He does such good work.
It's just a great show about loss and sort of when the anchor of a group of people is removed from that group of people, how that entire group moves on and how it affects and changes the dynamics of all the different people. And they use a lot of like bittersweet humor to sort of move through very difficult things. And I think it's a very effective show.
Yeah. It's about mental health, really. It's about mental health and people trying to connect. And Jason and Harrison and Jessica play shrinks. That's why it's called shrinking. And the ways in which they interweave mental health is so clever. And, you know, you get to the end of an episode and you're like, oh, that was an episode about trauma, or that was an episode of PTSD or about,
loss.
It's a lot of loss.
Brett Goldstein, that dude, I didn't realize when you said the name, I was like, oh yeah, yeah. And then I just Googled him. I was like, oh yeah, freaking Roy Kent. Like,
right,
the best one of my, like, the best character I think other than Ted Lasso himself, I think, is Roy Kent.
At 100%. And you know, he was a writer on Ted Lasso.
I didn't know that.
Before he was cast as Roy Kent.
Really?
You would read the part in the writer's room and they're like, you know what, you should play the part.
Yeah.
And that's how we got it.
Well, if you guys can put in a good word for me, I have a podcast that I think he'd be great as a guest on.
We're going to take a short break. Stay tuned for more of the episode.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There are so many things in life that stress me out. You know what shouldn't stress me out? Eating! So we can all eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options for all dietary needs. And you can discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and even some drinks to help you stay fueled up. Factor is also celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month's Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Say that 5 times fast. Earth Month Eats. Earth Month Eats. Just remember, these no fuss, no mess meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning up. So just simply heat and eat the good stuff. Head to factormeals.com/TTP50 and use code TTP50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code TTP50 at factormeals.com/TTP50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals. So let's wrap here. I know you guys have a hard out. So Michael, I'm going to ask you these questions again too, but we're going to alternate. I don't know if you remember your answers the first time from episode 128, but you're welcome to give new answers. Wow. Okay, so Ryan, let's see. The first standard closing question that I ask everybody is just, what motivates you?
What motivates me? I get very inspired by new new writers, new things that I like, new television shows, new art that comes out. And I think that the fact that things are getting, you know, like a play like that, what we're doing right now, like a Jane Anger, the fact that this was born out of a very dark place and it outgrew this beautiful, fun, lively, exciting, funny show. I get inspired by the fact that, like, even in the darkest of times, there's still a path towards creation that can inspire other people.
That's beautiful. And Michael, is your motivation changed? I don't know if you remember what you said, but
his motivation is Ryan Spahn.
Now my motivation is Ryan Spahn and money. No, I don't know. Do you remember what it was?
No, I meant to go back and listen, but I didn't listen to the old episode.
But this might be different now, but I would say I'm much more excited, especially post pandemic, I put an air quote, about new work as well. Cause I was like, you know, it's especially in the theater, like when you're dreaming in the theater, you sort of always dream about the old plays because I'm not a writer, so I don't come up with new plays, but there was always I could do this old play, or what about this old play, or dream role. What's your dream role? And I've been very lucky. I played a bunch of my dream roles already. I got to play Hamlet. I got to play Prior Walter. I got to play Arnold in Torch Song. And like the truth is a dream. Now when I think of dream roles, it's something that hasn't been written yet. It's, you know, I didn't know that William Shakespeare in Jane Anger was going to be a dream role until Talene Monahan wrote it. And truly, like, I would much rather be doing this part in this play than whatever was next on my bucket list. Because, you know, this was never on my bucket list because I didn't know it existed.
And it's fun to imagine the people who are witnessing this play going, that is now my dream role.
Yeah, that's good.
And that they get to think about a revival of this, or doing it in a class, or doing it at wherever it gets, you know, produced regionally, and getting to play the role that they are now imagining as their dream role.
I love that. All right. So, Ryan, what advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now starting out down a similar path?
I would say make sure to take care of your mental and physical health as early as possible and really protect it. I think people put it off and don't, or neither scared of it or aren't acknowledging it or don't realize that it's a big part of what we battle, because we have so much time spent in our heads, either when we're crafting a role or when we're dealing with rejection or, you know, dealing with success. And it all sort of creates this mental space that we all live in. And I think that if as early on as you can, try to come to peace with it and try to understand yourself inside of that. And I think that is advice I would have given myself if I could talk to myself.
All right, so now both of you, if you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
Ooh, like a play?
Play musical, or even you can watch a sitcom if you wanted, your choice.
Oh boy. I mean, if it was a sitcom, it would be Schitt's Creek, or television show would be probably, I don't know.
Golden Girls for me.
Schitt's Creek would be mine. I think
that's what you said the first time too. That sounds very familiar.
No, I also, this is maybe blasphemous, but I think I would have maybe said Into the Woods, but I gotta say, I'm getting tired of Into the Woods.
Blasphemy!
I've seen it so many times. And the Broadway production is incredible. I saw it twice. I loved it. There's a production happening here right now. Everyone's like, it's so good. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to.
Well, I think it leans into what you said earlier, which is now there's such an excitement and a wonder about what's to come versus what has been. And yeah. I think, like, I don't know what play I would want to see over and over again, because I don't think I'm interested in the plays that already exist as much. I'm more interested in, like, I bet this play, Jane Anger, I would have probably wanted to see multiple times if I had been in the audience. You know, I think it's that probably plays into why you're less interested in Into the Woods.
I also, you know, like Into the Woods, like the original Into the Woods that they filmed for PBS is imprinted in my brain. I saw it so many times as a kid.
When we were recording, we would lay in bed and watch the PBS recording.
Yeah, we watched it together when we were dating. And I just know everything, every single second of that thing. And so I can't watch Into the Woods without hearing the original cast. As good as, you know, as amazing as these new casts have been, I still always hear them. And so I guess, you know, I guess it's like, I don't want to see Into the Woods over and over again, but I want to see that version of Into the, well, I've seen it so many, I don't need to see it anymore because I know it so well. What's yours, Alan?
Mine is, I go to Rent because that was my touchstone that got me into theater. And it's just something that, like, for the same reason, it makes me feel that nostalgia and that love and that attraction to the stage that made me fall in love with the craft.
So yeah, that's
a really good.
I listened
to
that soundtrack. I'll tap into that soundtrack.
It's got everything. That show has everything.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. Well, everybody, please go see Ryan and Michael and in Jane Anger down at the Shakespeare Theater Company in Washington, D.C. Thank you both for this lovely conversation. Ryan, lovely to meet you. Michael, lovely to see you again. You guys are so amazing.
I've loved watching your kids get bigger. Between the radio plays we did and these podcasts, I've gotten to see your kids pop in, and it's really sweet.
That was the little one that popped in earlier. He's 6 and a half now. Yeah.
Can't believe it.
Wow.
A baby. I mean, you know, like he was a baby when we were first doing As the Curtain Rises early in the pandemic.
Which is, we're promoting it again because Avatar 2 just dropped.
Oh, right. We saw it.
We just saw it yesterday.
Yeah. So everyone go see As the Curtain, or listen to As the Curtain Rises. You can find more of me and these episodes at thetheaterpodcast.com. Show your support for the podcast at thetheaterpodcast.com/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook. Wherever you're listening now, please leave a rating, leave a review. It helps others discover the podcast. And thank you to Jukebox the Ghost for the intro and outro music. All right, thank you both. I know you got to run. I appreciate this so much.
Thank you so much. Talking to you. Great to see you. The beard looks great.
Thank you.
Be well.
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.